This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk to one of my favorite guests. He is a perennial visitor here on Intelligent Medicine because he's highly prolific. He's author of numerous books, and he has a great new book. Boy, I wish I thought of this title. Fantastic title. 10 Reasons You Feel Old and Get Fat. And the tagline is, How You Can Stay Young, Slim, and Happy. He, of course, is Dr. Frank Lipman. He's a New York Times bestselling author of another great book, The New Health Rules. He is one of the country's top pioneers in the field of integrative medicine. And he also has a very successful practice here in New York City. He's been featured everywhere, Men's Health, Vogue, Men's Journal. He's a regular contributor to The Huffington Post. And he writes a weekly blog for his own site, which I highly recommend. You really should subscribe to his newsletter. It's at www.bewell.com. And Dr. Lipman has an interesting background. He was originally trained in his native country of South Africa. And one of the things that doctors do in South Africa when they get trained is they go out literally into the bush. And they, you know, work with indigenous folks and get a lot of experience working in a setting that is not a westernized setting. And then coming over here, he's incorporated some of the insights that he developed working over there in South Africa. So without further ado, welcome back, Frank. It's a pleasure having you here on Intelligent Thanks. Medicine.
Thanks, Ron. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to be on your show.
Indeed. So so help us out a little bit in terms of, you know, what I said in relationship to how you you kind of developed a sort of a bicultural orientation to medicine. You know, you had the standard Western training, but in a little bit like a cultural anthropologist, you went out into the community and you kind of learned about alternative health practices.
Right. Well, that was my first exposure. Just to correct you, not everyone in South Africa, it's not really part of the training.
Okay.
It happened to be what I did. But that was my first real exposure to non-traditional medicine, because when you're working in the bush, traditional healers. And, you know, the local population go to the traditional healers a lot. And the clinic, you know, we were working in the bush and we had to take a jeep and go to various clinics all over. And next to the one clinic, there happened to be a traditional healer who I sort of got friendly with and just watched how she worked, because, you know, there were often patients that we couldn't help that the traditional healer was helping. So I was just quite intrigued, you know, from the cultural perspective. I didn't think it worked medically. I just couldn't work out what the hell was going on. So I sort of got friendly and started watching what was going on, and, you know, made me realize that, you know, maybe we don't have all the answers in Western medicine, because when you finish your initial training, you think you know everything. So that was my first exposure, and that really got me thinking about there must be other ways, and that sort of led me on a path. And when I came back and worked in the city, and I worked in a GP practice, and people were coming in and they couldn't poop and they were tired and they couldn't sleep, and I didn't have any tools to help them, because, as you know, in our regular Western training, we train in crisis care. You know, we train to take care of acute, you know, appendices, you know, there's surgery, there's acute heart attacks, you break a bone, which is what I did in the hospital and in the hospital in the bush. But, you know, these chronic day-to-day problems, we're not really taught to take care of. So, you know, I came back into the city and these people were coming in and I didn't have any tools. And once again, you know, these people, I was working in this hip practice and the people were going to the only acupuncturist in town and seeing a homeopath, and they were coming in and they were telling me, well, the acupuncture helped and the homeopathy helped. So that sort of confirmed, you know, what I was thinking, that I have to explore other modalities because my training is very limited. And then I emigrated to the States and got exposed to acupuncture, and that was in 84. So it's been a long journey since, but yeah, my first exposure was to traditional healers in Africa, and then to acupuncturists really in New York. And it's just very interesting to see how different cultures view the body, which is, seems to be, most cultures view it very similarly in terms of creating balance and symptoms as a sign of there's some imbalance in the system, rather than giving you something just to suppress a symptom, which is what we do in Western medicine. So it all started coming together over the years, and really came together when I met Jeff Bland, who was teaching functional medicine, and functional medicine was putting this into a language that made sense from a Western medical perspective. So that's the short story of a long story.
Indeed, and it's been quite a journey, and a successful one for you, and culminating in your recent book, 10 Reasons You Feel Old and Get Fat. Now, that's a real grabber, that title. Congratulations on that title, because it really brings you in.
Right. Well, that title came from a patient of mine, because he said to me, he said, you know what you do is great, because everyone's going to want to have it, because no one wants to get old and fat, and what you do is you help them with that. So that's sort of where there's a bit of a facetious title. I'm not convinced it's a great title, but it is a grabber.
Indeed. But so you actually start the book with a rather surprising contention, which is that it's not inevitable to become tired, overweight, debilitated, that is a matter of what we term in medicine epigenetics, which is that you can influence your genes. You're not just fated to age and deteriorate.
Right. I think this is a concept that is in every culture, and not in Western medicine. The concept of function, you know, that there's a decreasing function of the organs as we get older. You know, so, you know, what my premise is this age, or is it just a decrease in function? And very often it's just a decrease in function. And when you improve functioning of whether it's the nervous system, the musculoskeletal system, the liver, the digestive system, people feel much better. So, you know, there's a spectrum between health and disease. There's a huge gray area between this black and white of gray of health and disease. And in Western medicine, we wait for someone to be to have a disease before we think of even treating them. And so, you know, what I'm saying is what we all say in functional medicine: there's a spectrum of decreasing function, and the aging process is really a decrease in that function. And if you improve function, and you can improve function in many ways, you're going to feel much better.
Well, in your book, you challenge a lot of myths. You take on quite a few of them, including myths about aging. What are some of the myths about aging that you disagree with and think can be impacted by lifestyle measures, diet, right, exercise, supplements, and so on?
Well, I'm sure you see this too. You know, I see so many people in their 40s, actually even in their 30s now, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, they come in and they say, well, I'm putting on weight, I'm feeling old, I have all these aches and pains, my memory's going, I'm foggy, I can't think properly, I wake up in the morning and I can hardly move, my energy's decreasing, I'm just getting old, doc, what can I do? And that's not the case. A lot of these symptoms that we associate with aging are actually, once again, from decreased function, and it's not aging. You don't have to feel tired as you get older. You don't have to have aches and pains as you get older. Your memory doesn't have to go as you get older. You can be sharp. You can be vital as you get older. Now, there's no question, as you get older, it becomes a little bit harder and it takes more work. And there's no question, as you get older, you may not be able, you may be a little bit less resilient in terms of, you know, what you eat. You can't eat the same amount of crap that you used to eat. You can't drink maybe as much as you used to eat. You may need to get the right amount of sleep. Your body's not as resilient, so you can't abuse it as much. But if you look after your body, if you sleep well, if you deal with your stress, if you move your body, if you eat well, if you take the right supplements, you can remain vital and energetic and not gain weight until, you know, hopefully until you drop. So, you know, within reason, I think, you know, you have to be sensible. You may not be able to do the same hardcore exercise you did 10 years ago. You may not be able to eat as much sugar or even carbs as you did 10 years ago. But if you adjust and make those minor adjustments, you should be able to feel absolutely vital as you get older.
Indeed, and I second that statement for sure. So, you know, you enumerate 10 basic reasons or themes why people age and ultimately put on weight and deteriorate. And front and center, number one, reason number one is you're not eating the right foods. So what does that constitute? You know, where are we going wrong dietarily in your estimation?
Well, you know, first of all, I don't think there's one right diet for everyone. But by far the majority of people I see, and especially what's happened in our culture over the last, you know, 30, 40 years, is they're scared of fat, so they don't eat enough fat, and they eat too many carbohydrates, and especially the wrong carbohydrates for what their bodies can tolerate. So number one is, you know, eat real food, eat, you know, as close to nature as possible. Do not be scared of fat. Fat, if it's made in nature, basically, it's good for you. If made in a factory, probably not good for you. So, you know, eat healthy fats. Be wary of too many carbohydrates. And watch the source of your food. You know, I'm not against meat, but I'm against factory farm meat. So it's the source of even the animal protein. I'm not against animal protein. If you're eating grass-fed meat, I don't think it's a problem for most people. If you're eating wild fish, if you're eating eggs, you know, from pasture chickens. So I think it's a source, a lot of, especially the animal proteins, which is important. So I think we've been brainwashed to think that, you know, we have to tend towards vegetarianism, eat lots of whole grains, and that's probably not the right diet for the majority of people. For some people it works, but I think for the majority of people that's probably not the right diet.
Yeah, there's actually a movement afoot in your home country, spearheaded by a very controversial guy.
Huge movement, yes.
Yeah, they wanted to put him in jail. His name is Tim Noakes.
Tim Noakes, yep.
Right.
Highly
controversial.
Tim Noakes, well, it's not even controversial for us here, but right. In South Africa it sort of was controversial. You know, what's interesting, he was a top physiologist. When I was still in South Africa, he was a big sports doc. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a book and used to promote these high carbohydrate diets for athletes.
Right, carbo loading.
And he developed, carb loading for athletes. And he developed diabetes by practicing what he was preaching.
Wow.
Which, by the way, happened to me too. I became pre-diabetic by being scared of fat and eating too many whole grains and fruit, etc.
Interesting.
So his story is sort of similar to mine. But anyway, he became diabetic and he went, what the hell is going on? And he started looking at the literature and found the low-carb literature and then started preaching that and has gotten very hot because he was at the university. He was an academic at the university, and they've given him a very hard time because he had the guts to say, oops, I screwed up. I was telling you the wrong thing. And so, but he's really started a movement. I mean, it's very interesting. Low-carb in South Africa has become so big, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And particularly suited, perhaps, to the Aboriginal population there, because there's a tremendous incident, you know, just as in the United States, and, you know, parallels with developments in many parts of the world, some of the indigenous populations have become very obese on a Western diet and, you know, very high percentage of diabetes.
Exactly. So this is what's happened. And in spite of that, so it's basically happening all over the world, but the local black population, the Africans there, are obviously genetically predisposed to, you know, heart disease, diabetes, obesity when they eat all these carbs. So So it's even more of a problem there. And yes, so he's starting to make a dent. It's actually pretty amazing. And he's a very genuine, lovely guy. I mean, I don't know him personally, but he's the real deal. I mean, the guy's a serious academic. He's not a fad guy. It's just interesting that they're giving him such a hard time. So hopefully it'll be, you know, taken up by even more people there.
You attack several diet myths in your book, and one of them I found kind of interesting. If I don't have celiac disease, I can safely eat gluten-containing foods. True or false?
Right, that's absolutely false. So you can. So many people come in to see me, and you know, because I take most people off gluten. In fact, so many people now I'm taking off all grains. Not everyone, but a lot of people I'm taking off all. But I take everyone off gluten because I think gluten creates problems in the majority of people. But you know, people will say, "Well, I've had the celiac test and it's negative." Well, you don't, you know, just a small percentage of people have celiac disease, but you can still be sensitive to gluten and have low-grade chronic problems caused by gluten, from weight gain to fatigue to bloating to joint pains to skin problems to all sorts of problems. It still can create inflammation in the body because it triggers the, what I'm sure your listeners know about leaky gut. So it triggers something called zonulin, which will, you know, cause a leaky gut. So I take most people off gluten, and I hear, you know, the answer often is, well, I don't have celiac disease, why can't I eat gluten? So I still tell people, stop gluten for 2 or 3 weeks, see how you feel, then reintroduce it, and once again, see how you feel, and then we'll go from there.
And another of the myths that you attack is, if you don't have any clear-cut allergies, all foods are basically okay for you. True or false? I mean, that represents the view of the conventional medical establishment. If you don't go into a choking fit or anaphylaxis with a certain food, then you're fine with it, no problem.
Right, which is, you know, as we know, obviously not true. So many people suffer from this low-grade inflammatory symptoms. You know, once again, the skin problems, the joint problems, the fatigue, the brain fog, the bloating, and that's just because they're not digesting certain foods, you know, gluten being the commonest one, but some, you know, for some people it's dairy, corn is very common, soy is another one, for some people eggs. I mean, I love eggs, but some people are sensitive to eggs. But what I will say, what I am finding is so many people have a microbiome, you know, the gut flora that's out of balance.
You devote a whole chapter to that subject in the book, right?
Right, and when the microbiome is out of balance, you tend to have more sensitivities to food. And when you correct the microbiome, the sensitivities sometimes, I would say even oftentimes, get better. Not always, but definitely sometimes get better. So, you know, food sensitivities as opposed to food allergies are very interesting. And you know, I'm not a big one for testing with bloods. I get people to do an elimination diet and reintroduce. And I find that more helpful. So I do find correcting the microbiome often helps food sensitivities.
And you have some pretty pretty decided opinions about soy as a food, soy being considered a health food here in the United States, so many people embracing soy because of its supposed health benefits, but you're not particularly a fan.
No, especially, first of all, most soy is genetically modified. I think it's 90-odd percent. I'm conscious, somewhere in the 90s. So I'm not a fan of genetically modified foods. So most of it's genetically modified. And even when it's organic, it often causes especially digestive problems with people. So fermented soy seems to be much less of a problem. So I'm not really against organic fermented soy products. But regular soy, I tend to get people off, and, you know, they can try some organic soy and see how they feel, but I tend initially to take people off soy products.
So what you propose in the book is kind of a reboot for people who are feeling old and fat or tending towards that, which is your 2-week Revitalize program. I don't want to create a spoiler alert here, but can you give us a little bit of an idea of what people will find in the book?
Yeah, so the Revitalize program is I take people off, you know, because one of the chapters I talk about carbohydrate intolerance, which we should, let me just talk a little bit about that, you know, because we're talking about a low carbohydrate diet. Mm-hmm. What I do find is a lot of people, same as they become, you know, intolerant to let's say gluten, I find many people become intolerant to too many carbohydrates, or they don't metabolize the carbohydrates as well as they used to, especially as they get older and they become insulin resistant and then pre-diabetic. It happened to me, happened to Tim Noakes, he actually became diabetic. Happens to a lot of people. Their hemoglobin A1C, this slowly goes up, even if they're eating whole grains and lots of fruits, which happened to me. So mm-hmm. I see this a lot. They're
and by the way, you probably, you know, you being in this field for a long time, you probably had an early phase where you were kind of vegetarian, quasi-vegetarian, you know, doing yoga and that kind
yep.
of stuff. And that was your idea of a healthy approach.
Exactly, exactly. And that was what I did for a long time until I went, oops, I'm pre-diabetic eating like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it made me realize something's not right here. And then I started noticing it with more and more of my patients. Partly because I was scared of fat.
Right.
I've had very little
We bought into that whole dogma, you know, that was so popular in the 80s.
Exactly. Yep. And so I bought into the dogma too. And so that's really changed my thinking. And I started bringing in more healthy fats, not being scared of meat and not being scared of coconut oil, which we're told is really bad, and started eating much more healthy fat and much fewer carbohydrates. My hemoglobin A1C came down. My cholesterol got better. I mean, it's so interesting. Everything I thought was related to fat and got better by eating more fat and less carbohydrates. So my blood pressure, which was always borderline, and I couldn't understand why I had borderline blood pressure, because I was sort of, you know, doing my yoga and I was eating well and exercising, that came down. The little bit of extra weight that I had, and I didn't even realize I had much, came down. So just by eating more fat and less carbohydrates, and I see this with so many patients. Mm-hmm. And it's not that carbohydrates are necessarily bad for everyone, but I think the idea that you're eating too many carbohydrates for what your body can tolerate is the point that most people need to understand. You may be eating too many for your particular metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
So in the program, in the book, I take a low carbohydrate diet. I take people off all grains. They can have some beans. I mean, it's basically they're eating protein, vegetables, and good fat for the most part. They, you know, allow some beans and that's a diet. And most people feel a whole lot better just eating like that. And they come back after 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks, whatever, and they've lost weight. Their energy's better. Their brain fog's cleared up. So it's very interesting. And what I do as well in the book and what I do in the practice, and it's not essential, but I think it does make a difference, I give them herbal antimicrobials, which kill the bad guys in the gut.
Mm.
So I put them on what I call my cleanse, which is adding antimicrobial herbs, which tries to create some type of balance in the gut, because I see so many people with low-grade infections in the gut, which, you know, they're not big infections where they're feeling sick, but it's low-grade, and when mm-hmm. you actually just use some herbs for a while and clear it up, they feel so much better.
We'll get into some of the specifics on that in part two of today's podcast. We'll talk a little bit about supplements.
Great.
We'll talk a little bit about herbs. But we got a lot more to talk about because it's a big subject. 10 reasons you feel old and get fat. And we've covered the nutrition part, but there's a lot more to it. With today's guest, Dr. Frank Lipman. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.